Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain, where we lift the curtain on politics and theater. You know, two areas a lot of people think don't ever meet, but here they do. As the political analyst for WGN-TV and host of CLTV's Politics Tonight and Broadway in Chicago Backstage on the Comcast Network, we'll touch on everything from national, international, state, and local politics to the artistic side of our city. We're going to feature the hottest shows and theaters because when it comes to theater, New York, watch your back. Chicago gets it right. Plus, we'll look at other social and legal issues of interest to you each week, hoping to spark a little interest, ensure meaning towards the bigger picture, and maybe even spread some knowledge along the way. Get ready, everybody. We're going to raise the curtain. We're looking behind and underneath the scenes. Let's get to it. I recently saw a production of Bakersfield Mist. It's being put on by the Timeline Theater Company, one of the great theater companies in Chicago. And actually, typically, all of their productions happen at their theater on Wellington. This is not. This is over at Stage 773 on Belmont. But it brings together two of the city's great talents in just this really intriguing show that I think when you walk out, you say to yourself, could this be me? Could I be living this life? You'll understand in just a moment. Let me welcome to the podcast a true Chicago legend. And I'm sorry, because I know everybody says this about you, Mike, but you are. Mike Nussbaum joins us, 90 years young and performing like he's 30 in the city of Chicago. And I want to thank you, and I'm honored that you are joining me today.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
And joining us as well, your co-star, not quite your age, though, Janet Ulrich Brooks, is the much younger performer on the stage, but also just an incredible job in this show called Bakersfield Mist. And Janet, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for calling me young.
I have to ask you, you know, when I do a Broadway show for Comcast called Backstage, and if I'm sitting with somebody like a Stephen Schwartz or something like that, sometimes you get kind of like a wow, look at the impact this person has had in this theater community. So let's just take a moment of tribute. And Janet, let me ask you, do you have that sense when you're working with Mike?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Sometimes I just feel so lucky, so fortunate to have the opportunity to work with Mike. And, I look over at him on stage and I think, wow, look what I get to do, flop stories with Mike Nussbaum.
I love it. And I know, Mike, you feel the same way, but I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about the story, Mike, if you would, of Bakersfield Mist. What is the general plot for people who haven't seen it?
The story concerns a woman living in a trailer camp, where she picks up for $3 what she believes to be a Jackson Pollock painting. And I play a snooty, aesthetic, aesthete, whatever the word you want to use, a guy who comes to verify the painting and is quite certain in advance that it is a phony. And the play is about their initial conflict, and at some point both characters discover the humanity in the other. And I think it's in addition to focusing on the interest in Jackson Pollock and his great influence on American and world art, the play is about two humans finding a way to make contact.
And you get a sense, Janet, as this play goes on, that Mike's character has a lot to hide. I mean, I don't know whether there really is, but it's as though your character knows an awful lot about him, like she's done research. Or are these just shots in the dark she's taking, that there's this past in him?
No, she has looked him up. She has done her homework. This is actually based on, the character is based on a woman named Terry Horton, who does have this painting that she believes to be a Jackson Pollock and has been trying to get validation that it is indeed real, and has learned a great deal about the art world as she's gone on. So, she has definitely done her homework and knows some things about his past. Of course, she doesn't know, everything. He shares some personal information as well that she did not know, but professionally, yes, she's done She's done her homework. She's a little smarter than she appears to be at first.
I guess that's what I'm saying. She starts off, and you see her as this, I'm trying to avoid maybe inappropriate phrases, but you just see her as this simple woman who's living in a trailer, right? And, mm-hmm. and you know, so she's poor, she's, you just don't see her as this intellectual, intelligent person. She's just this person that tripped over something. But as the play goes on, I think it's what you're referencing, this is no stupid person. She knows what's going on.
People know what they want, and it is so much about those snap judgments that we make on people. You know, in the art world, like Mike's character called it, the blink, and that judgment that you make on a piece of art, deciding whether it's real or not, just in a blink. And we do that to people too. And this definitely deals with the culture clash of these two people from different worlds, bringing maybe snap judgments on each other, but then finding out that. Yeah, there is a great human depth to people that we don't often think of right away.
And Mike, your character, of course, very sophisticated, as you say. I mean, you couldn't place these two people in or juxtapose them in two more opposite lifestyles, right? New York meets, this rural living kind of a thing. And, of course, there's the unseen character, Mike, of your driver, but who almost has a presence out there. You get the sense that this is your escape route. Get me to this car and get me out of here. But your character goes through transition in this show, does he not, in terms of realizing that, you know, maybe that snooty art critic he is has a lot to learn?
Yeah, not the least of it is that she's a heavy drinker, and she, at some point, after he reveals the depth of his feeling about Pollock's work, she gets him to have a drink, and he has more than one drink.
Right.
It loosens him up enormously, and then he begins to reveal a great deal about himself and his past, and he begins to understand her in a way that he didn't before. And I think, I don't know that we've mentioned that it's very funny as well. The play has a lot of comic lines and comic interaction, but it does have that serious connection of two opposites that is dramatic and fun.
Yeah, oh, very much so. In fact, actually, as you said that, I thought to myself, if somebody said to me, is it a drama or a comedy, I would lean towards calling it more of a comedy. I would just put a caveat and say, but not totally.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. How do you, Janet, how do you prepare for a role like this? I mean, what do you, you know, with the depth of experience you bring in, and then you play this character who is seemingly, appearingly simple, but not, what goes into creating that for an audience?
Are you talking to me?
Well, I'll ask both of you, and I'll start with Janet for her.
All right. Well,
Mike, go ahead and take it.
Studying the lines and trusting the lines. It's something I learned from David Mamet. He would always say, trust the lines. When you're in doubt, trust the lines. The playwright tells you what to think and what to say, and even how to say it in some ways.
Hmm.
And that's how I prepare.
Yeah. Janet, you agree? Of course, David Mamet, what a great talk about somebody to teach you that lesson. There's the guy. Janet, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've never done a David Mamet play, but I have lived in parts of the country where, I've lived in a trailer before. So there you go. I'll say it. And
it's all right. Hey, we're learning.
No, I trust the certainly start with the text and tell the story, and enter into it and allow yourself to go on that journey, open yourself up to that journey, I like to trust the humanity of the person and believe that there is more to find. And I certainly did learn. I'll tell you, living down in the Ozarks for many years, I learned that there are people who live a different way than I had been raised, but boy, they know things that I don't know anything about.
Wow.
So everybody's smart in their own way, you know. So you have to, you know, find your way into what their daily life is,
yeah,
and what they have to go through and how they navigate that.
And I want to ask each of you about working with Timeline, because, of course, you've both been with various theater companies, but Timeline has a kind of a mission. I mean, it works with history, and it's important for them to connect history to current issues, social issues, political issues. Do you have, when you think, I'll start with you, Janet, on this one. When you look for a role, do you want a role that has a message that, that changes people, or are you out just to entertain?
Oh, I like both of those things. And, I think that the misconception there is that I actually go hunting for roles, because usually an actor gets called in to audition for something that's already been chosen to do. So I'm kind of a hired gun. But yes, I love to do roles that that offer up conversation that about humanity, that teaches more about the world we live in, and that celebrate humanity, that get mad and rail against it, or that cry for it. Absolutely. I like something with substance and depth, but I also, I've done a few can-cans in my day.
That's why I'm always curious. I mean, people get drawn to different things. Mike, in your long history of work, what plays have draw you the most that you enjoy performing in most?
Most often, it's the play that I'm doing right now. But in my past, the plays that I loved working with, of course, were the Mamet plays that were so important to my career. Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice, when I had a chance to play Shylock for Barbara Gaines, and it was one of the highlights of my life. The same with doing Beckett, Endgame, playing Ham. The list for me, thank goodness, goes on and on and on, and it's hard for me to remember all the roles that I love so enormously, but I have a new one coming up in next April at Northlight that I'm very eager to get to work on.
Tell us what's coming up. What are you going to be doing at
Northlight? Albert Einstein, and it's called Relativity, and it's a new play by Marc St. Germain, and it's something I'm very eager to get to work on.
Is it a one-man show?
No. Thank goodness, no. Tough enough doing a two-man show, except when you've got a partner like Janet who makes life easy for old actors who have a tendency to go up in lines. So.
I love it. And Janet, what is coming up for you next after Bakersfield?
I also have a show coming up at Northlight. I'm going to be working on On the Water, which is the show, I believe, right before Relativity. I'll be working with Penny Slusher and Fran Guinan, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, love Fran.
Yeah. And then I'll be doing a play at Victory Gardens after that called Native Garden by Karen Zacharias.
And I'm sure I will see you at the opening of that. You guys are doing some and have been doing such great stuff and truly Chicago treasures. And I appreciate that. I want to encourage everybody to check out Bakersfield Mist because it looks like it's going to wrap up there in the middle of October. So if you haven't seen it, the truth, just the two of you on stage, that's just, it's not easy to do. Do you worry about, Mike, do you ever worry about, I did shows, I used to perform whatever, and I always fear just dropping lines, forgetting lines. It freaked me out. Do you worry about that kind of thing?
Oh, of course I do, constantly. But fortunately, I do it all the time, too, and Janet almost always saves me. Although that's one of the things I love about that kind of work, the danger of going up and the need to dance around and improvise until you get back to where you should be. That's fun and excitement.
I guess. For me, it's panic. For you, it's fun. It's why you've been acting for all of these years. I want to encourage everybody to check this out. And, of course, they can it's Timeline Theater Company. They can get tickets at Timeline Theater. And, by the way, they spell it the right way, T-R-E. Don't you like when people spell things, spell the word theater with an R-E at the end and not E-R?
No, I prefer ER.
Do you really?
That's American.
We need to put you in more British productions, Mr. Nussbaum.
Right. I'm a troublemaker.
I love it. Anyway, it's a great show. Bakersfield Mist, Timeline Theater. Don't miss it. You only have till October 15th. Two incredible performances by two people who were so kind enough to give their time with us today. The legendary Mike Nussbaum and the also legendary Janet Ulrich Brooks. I want to thank you guys for being with me. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Well, that is just a taste of the great music that is a part of a show called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. It's a show that's actually been around for many years, from the 1960s, but it comes back time and again, and it should, because it's just a feel-good, fun tale of a young man who's working his way through the ranks, and he's not working very hard, maybe, to do it, but boy, is he strategic. We're going to meet a couple of the principals in this show, playing in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. By the way, it's over at the Marriott Lincolnshire Theater, and you can catch it now. It's running through much of October. Joining me is Ari Butler. He plays the role of J. Pierpont Finch. Pierpont Finch. It is a role. I wanted to play it one day. Maybe Ari will take a night off and let me do it for him. We've recently seen him in Cleveland in Little Shop of Horrors. New York is his home, but I think Chicago is becoming his new home. Ari, I appreciate your spending some time with me.
Oh, my pleasure. And any night you want to jump on up there, it would be a gift.
How are you feeling about tonight?
We don't have a show tonight.
Oh, so I can go do anything I want. I can go do anything I want on that stage. Well, also joining us, I have to tell you, is one of my favorite people in all of musical theater. And her role of Miss Jones in this show, for that period of time when she's on stage, she is there. She takes it over. She is just so present. And I think, Ari, you would agree with that. Felicia Fields, who I think is, I mean, she's done so many things in this area, but is so best known for her role or portrayal of Sophia in The Color Purple on Broadway and on the national tour. To me, it was a knock-your-socks-off performance I have never gotten over. What a thrill to see you and How to Succeed. Hey again, Felicia. Good to talk to you.
How are you, Paul? So nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you know, when I saw this show and I said to the, you know, the folks working on the show, I said, I got to talk to Ari and you got to get me Felicia. And they did.
Well, you
and
here got
you both. I got you both, and I love you guys. I love you guys. So, Ari, let me start with you. Look, you're a young kind of guy, and this is a show that I won't put Felicia in my category of age, but I actually do remember from when it came along first on Broadway with a guy named Robert Morris, Bobby Morris. He did the film, and of course, recently it got this just new life through Daniel Radcliffe and Nick Jonas and Darren Criss, and all these new people got introduced to the show. So I'm just curious, Ari, when you look at a role like this that has been around for such a long time, do you love to study it, or do you just take it on as a fresh new thing that Ari Butler's now going to tackle?
Well, I was introduced to this role and this show with the Matthew Broderick revival.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I saw that too, yeah.
Which was an amazing production. So we don't want to miss that step either.
We do not, no.
That's how I was introduced to it. But I wouldn't say that I went back and studied these men or in the recent revival boys as they tackled the role. I like to come at it afresh. I have some life experiences that made me feel like I could connect to the material in my own way. And then, of course, you have a director and a whole production team that, you know, add to your own insights. And there you go. So, no, I didn't make a study of Robert Morris or Daniel Radcliffe. But I will say that Robert Morris on opening night wrote me a very nice note.
How cool. So he knows this show is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. He's aware of it.
Very cool. Now, you gave me a lead there, so I have to grab it, but I'm not going to make you uncomfortable. You said, you know, life experience had helped you prepare. I don't want to get personal where you're uncomfortable. I'm just curious, what is it about your life that helped you understand the character of Ponty?
Well, look, I think that a lot of people understand what it feels like to feel out of your depth in a work environment, to feel like you have to put on a nice suit and pretend to know what you're doing before you actually have a clue or any experience that warrants you leading other people. And I've had experiences like that where I needed to come across as an authority on something that I didn't fully have a grasp of. That's what Finch is doing up there, is he's wearing the right suit and he's trying to say the right thing and connect with the right people so that he can accelerate his career.
Well, I was just thinking, the art of not knowing what you're talking about. TV, come join us. And Felicia, although according to the show, J.B. Bigley is the guy that runs the company, we all know Ms. Jones is the one who's really running that company. And and as I said, so here you are having created, and maybe not created, because I know Oprah was in that role in the movie, but, you know, to me, just this unmatchable performance of Sophie in Color Purple. Here, you take on a smaller role in this show, but very present when you're on stage, and you do your own thing with it. You and I talked after the show a little bit. The big number that you're a part of course, Brotherhood of Man. It's not the way it was originally done in that show. You bring us some jazz, some sultry, some scat. You got some good stuff going on.
Yeah, I actually, I took the very wonderful invention of YouTube has made it so you can look at various people's prior performances. And when working with Ryan, the musical director, he said he wanted to do more of what was closer to the revival. So we took a peek at Lilius, who was just here doing...
Gotta Dance, Lilius White. Yeah.
Gotta Dance. And she and I had gone to a dinner and talked and everything, and I kind of peeked at what she did, and we kind of worked it into my own flavor and what Ryan's situation was. It's a pretty long show, and so we kind of narrowed it down to that little space, but it's like... Miss Jones cannot contain herself. I watch you guys every night, and as Ari takes them through this little connective journey of bursting into song, she's the only one left that has not joined the crew. So she can't hold it any longer, and she just busts out with a little scat. Yes. And he joins in before it's over.
And I love it. And, of course, we don't want to ignore your love interest in this show, Ari, Rosemary Pilkington, the character played by Jessica Namy. But I have to say, I don't think J. Pierpont Finch, the love thing, it only fits into the extent it's part of the plan of becoming ruler of the world, right?
Okay.
I would say, actually, falling in love is the only thing that happens by accident in this show from J. Pierpont's point of view. It's the only thing that's not in his book. Certainly it adds a great, lovely dimension to the show. And for me as an actor, it's such a wonderful thing to get to do every night. It doesn't, I don't think it factors into his ascent, but it's certainly a delicious part of the story we tell.
And the reason I make the comment I do is because every time she asks your character out or makes some reference about the relationship, you can just see your mind is elsewhere. Your mind is really on this growth in your career, and you sort of go, oh, lunch, what, huh, okay.
Well, Paul, you know, this is pretty much like most relationships. Women get their ideas in their head, and that's a done deal for you guys.
That's a good point.
And of course, so it's not coming from his perspective. He just kind of fell into her trap.
and that part, you know, I'll tell you what, there, you do get that little flavor of years ago. Would it be that way today? What do you think, Felicia? Would relationships play out that way today?
Oh, no, not today. Not in this generation. You know, that's a bit old fashioned. Women, are not that way. The way that Rosemary is, she's got a whole idea about living in New Rochelle, and you know, she wrote a song about it. Here you go.
That's right. And of course,
she falls in love the second she sees Finch. Finch falls
exactly.
in love when he kisses another woman and thinks of her.
That's
so,
right.
So certainly it's a bit backwards. It's not the most romantic story ever shown on stage.
And by the way, that other woman that Finch kisses, of course, is Hedy LaRue, who's played by Angela Ingersoll, whose husband Michael, by the way, is a good friend. He used to be in the Jersey Boys. Now he's part of Under the Street Lamp. Tell Angela I said hello when you see her.
She had to practice that walk there, Paul.
I was going to say, I mean, she is this typical, you know, it's this bimbo kind of thing going on, that the role that she plays. But let me get Ms. Jones' perspective. You know, as you see the people who work in this company, Felicia, what is Ms. Jones' perspective on these people, especially Hedy shows up, who, you know, really doesn't know very much. She's just trying to sleep with the boss kind of a thing. But what's your take on these people that surround you?
Well, I've been with Mr. Bigley a while, and she probably is not the first one to come to the party. Between him and Milt, who's played by Neil, they're you know, we got this whole situation going about how men gawk at women, and now it would probably be a big deal in your workplace. But certainly, this is a situation by which the women are preyed upon. And she definitely has that dingbat kind of system.
Right.
When she says she types 12 words a minute, I kind of just fall out laughing. But Miss Jones sees it as another one of those females in that pool. She's been around that water cooler, and she knows that these women are looking to be a part of the big boys. You know, they make a whole Cinderella story about this.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going for that brass ring. They want to be a housewife living with the picket fence and the whole thing.
You know, to me,
she pretty much knows it all about what they're trying to be. But she, of course, is totally different.
And she plays that bit of that stereotypical role. Ari, by the way, one of the most beautiful songs in How to Succeed, in my opinion, is the song "I Believe in You." And
yes,
I assume you'd agree. Ari, you do a beautiful job with that number.
I can't imagine anyone would disagree.
We'll get them on the phone if they get. No, nobody would. It's wonderful. In fact, you know what I might do? We might even just take a little break and just listen to a little bit of the song "I Believe in You." Let's do that for just a few moments so people can understand just how beautiful it is.
I take heart to see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's the slam, bang, tang, reminiscent of gin and vermouth.
As you said, Ari, who could disagree that that is absolutely a gorgeous song? It truly is. I want to ask you, though, that is beautiful. And then there's a song in the show called "A Secretary Is Not a Toy," which I kind of wonder, depending on age groups, is also something that is sort of locked in time, right? We would never see something like that in terms of job environments today, or we shouldn't. And I'm just curious, as on the younger end of things, what is your reaction as you're in the show that very much presents a point in time, the 60s, which you weren't around for, but what is your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, I wish I could feel like it's totally dated. I mean, certainly things are better, incremental change, but, you know, you just look at what happened over at Fox News in the past couple
of months,
and you just have to, you know, you shake your head and you say, gosh, you know, how dated is this, really? I mean, certainly.
You know, what a great point that is, huh, Felicia? Maybe it's not so dated. All you got to do is pick up the newspaper.
Yeah, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Yeah,
it's much better, but it still exists. It just is what it is.
And folks who have not been to Marriott Lincolnshire, they should know this theater is in the round, and we don't have a lot of those theaters in this area, so that's a unique experience to have. And so, let me just get a reaction from both of you. Do you find it more difficult? Does it matter to you that you're playing in the round? Because everybody wants to feel like they're the front. You know, they're sitting in front of the stage, and I'll tell you, I've seen a lot of shows at Marriott, and you guys do it better than many.
I learned at the Marriott. That was my first equity job, and for me, it's kind of secondhand nature. It's for somebody who's usually working in the proscenium, it's difficult. You must know that there's someone with their eyes on you at all times. One perfect example for me is when Ari is singing the beginning of Brotherhood of Man, and people are watching me. I can see them in my peripheral vision trying to figure out what I'm just standing there for. And so I have to make sure that I'm invested in every moment that
right.
he's singing, and wherever he goes, that's where my eyes go. So, and that helps direct them, in you know, to concentrate into what he's doing. And I don't think a lot of people understand how important it is, because there's anywhere you can stand or sit in that theater that someone has their eyes on you at all times.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy thing to learn, but it definitely is tricky.
Ari, do you find it fun to work in the round?
Yeah, I mean, everything Felicia said, and I'll just add on that I love it. You almost can't make a mistake. Anywhere you're looking, somebody can see you, and what it affords you is the opportunity to just stand and talk to people, whereas in a proscenium or when the audience is sitting in front of you, you always have to kind of keep your shoulders turned out. It's inherently a little phonier. But in the round, any direction you're looking works for, you know, 2/3 of the audience.
Yeah. Well, the show, again, it's been around a long time, but I got to tell you, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying is a show you don't want to miss. It is just a great evening of fun. And the great thing about Marriott, it's what I did. I went out, had dinner first at the King's Wharf restaurant, nice steak, went and saw the show. It's just a really nice evening. And it is playing, as I said, through much of October. You can go to MarriottTheater.com and check out the tickets, or 847-634-0200 and see these incredible talents. And I know you're incredible talents, because Ari, when I was saying hi to you, there was some gentleman who had been in the show, and it was clear to me from his comments to you he had seen the show several times and he was coming back again next week.
He comes every week. Wow. He tells me where I got better.
And that's exactly what you need, right? Well, listen, it's great to have super fans, and I hope we get to see a lot more of you in Chicago. And Felicia, you promised me you'll never leave Chicago.
Oh, God, I hope to see. I have grandchildren now, so it is my wish and desire to get more work right here at home.
All
I don't
right.
care where you go. There's no place like home.
What phenomenal words. Felicia Fields, Ari Butler, you're doing a wonderful job in How to Succeed. I loved
thanks.
It. I encourage people to see it, and thanks for your time.
I'll just throw out, I'll
Thank
come
you,
back
Paul.
In a heartbeat. So.
Okay, we'll count on it. Hamilton,
right,
you might want to play Hamilton.
We'll
think about
that,
it.
Paul.
All right.
Ari back here.
Thank you, guys. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.